My name is Nissim Moses. I was born into a family of Mila. My father was considered one of the biggest Milam in America and probably the world. And he came from a big yichas of Mila, generations that go back to the Chaim Meiser. My mother's side also, my mother's father was a Mile in Bells, and she would help my father a lot. She was famous for coming to the Brisson so she could finish off, so my father could run to the next one. There was a line that was going around Lakewood, who did Moshe Rabbeinu's son's bris? And the answer was, Mrs. Moses. The tour says, I'm sure that every week someone else speaks here or about a different mitzvah, and everyone says that that's the biggest mitzvah in the whole world, I'm sure. But this week we're going to talk about the mitzvah that is the biggest mitzvah. The tour only devotes an entire siman to talking about just the greatness of the mitzvah of Mila, that besides the Chiyuv Karis, there were 13 covenants, Yud Gimel Krisis, as opposed to the whole Torah was only 3. Avram was only called the Shalem, we got Eretz Yisrael, and the Medrash in the Torah brings it, tells us that Avram Avinu sits at the Pesach of Gehenim, and he doesn't let anyone in who has a bris. If you have a bris, Avram Avinu doesn't let you into Gehenim. This is the reason that's brought down why, if Chas V'Shalom is a nafel, the minig is we take the arla off the nafel. Why do we take the arla off the nafel? The Medrash says that Hashem takes the arlas from the nafels, He puts them on Poshe Yisrael, He puts them on sinners of Kal Yisrael, so that He could sneak them by Avram Avinu into Gehenna. So we take it off so that Hashem won't be able to get a hold of it to put on to the sinners. It's gematria tofer, you should raise all the other mitzvahs. And in benching we say, before we say, Rabbi Yosef writes, this is the only mitzvah that we see. The Gdolei Hador were sameach, they were happy to close the Gemara, to go be mishtatif in Bris Milas to be a sandik, because the mitzvah of Mila is b'yisayi the Gdolei Metalma Torah. This great mitzvah happens to a person a few times in his life when he has a son. And the general consensus, you call the mayil, you tell him the place and time, and it's all done. However, different than tefillin and tzitzis, where there's no mitzvah for you to make the tefillin, the mitzvah of mila is pashtus for you to cut the arla and do the priya of your son. So even if, and we'll speak later with Shem, if you could hire somebody, but at least to know what your mitzvah is, also to know, does it make a difference which mile you hire? Does it make a difference? It seems all the same, one mile from another mile, maybe crying a little more or less. And also, there could be, like we'll see, a lot of different shilas in Mila, to know in your son and yourself, what could be an issue, maybe to go ask a shayla. Usually you say, I don't know anything about it, you just assume the male did right, very time, not the case. So before we get in to the tremendous shaylas and machlikas, as you can see on the paper, the Hilchas Mila and Hage Mila, so we have to first just know, most people have never seen a gid, maybe if they saw it before the bris, they don't remember what it looks like. So we have to know the Tzuras HaGid, and we have to know what a bris is in order to we can discuss the shaylas that are involved. So we have a picture over here. This is not a real estate, it's not a house, it's a gid. And if you were to look at a baby before the bris, all you would see is the outside skin. It's called the arachitzin. Here it's very noticeable, but in reality it's a very minor bump. You could almost miss it. And there's just one long skin coming up the whole length of the gid. Can everybody see? Is it blocking? This is the outside skin. On the inside, there's the shaft of the gid, and there's the roisha gid, which is called the atara, two parts. Now it's important to realize that this skin, although it's lying against it, is completely detached from that tara, from the gid. The gid acts like an elevator inside its shaft, like a hand in a sleeve. It could slide up and down. And when the baby erects and retracts all the time, this is completely removable from its outside skin. It goes up and down. On the other hand, we see here the second layer of skin. This skin is called priya. It originates in the charitz, which is right underneath the lip of the atara. It grows up. It's much thinner than the outside. It's called a krumarach, a thin membrane in halacha. It is very attached to the gid. It's stuck on, and it's very cone-shaped. So it's really really stuck on tight to the gid. This skin is called the priya. When it reaches the top, it folds itself over and it turns into the arlis skin. So it's a two-layered skin, and on the outside it eventually comes and joins the outside skin. I hope everyone can keep eating, I'm sorry. That's the tzuris hagid. Now obviously the first thing we want to do is cut off the arlo. What's called arlo? Instead it's one skin, but even though you don't see any difference in it, but in halakha, the part of it that covers the atara is called arlo, and the part below that is not arlo, it's arachitzin, and doesn't have to be cut off. So the first thing would be to cut off the arlo. In order to cut off the arlo, like we said, this slides right out. So the mayil will make a tvisa. Here we see a picture, the same picture as before. The mayil wants to take a little extra arlo, we'll see soon, for room to the pri on the bottom. It's a little off. So he takes his fingers and he just squeezes, it's very small. He squeezes it together. When he does that, he's squeezing out the atar, it slides down like an elevator, and he has in his hand the whole arlo till where he marked off. And by this way, if he'll now go and he'll take his knife, he'll cut the arlo off right underneath his fingers, he'll remove the entire arlo, and the arlo will be off. There is a tool that was about 100 years old that's used just as a security measure, which is called a guard. The guard is used by almost every mile today. After he makes his tfisa, he slides this on. The reason is, and it's happened, that sometimes a mayil can make a mistake, and even though he thinks he just has the arla and priya inside, he might, chas v'shalom, have a little bit of the atara inside, or all of it inside. I mean, unfortunately, a lot of stories. And therefore, the guard, the purpose of it, is supposed to be so thin that even if by mistake he's holding it, when he slides on the guard, it will push out the atara and it won't allow it to chas v'shalom. If it's still in there, it'll split. He's supposed to check if it's split. And this way, he won't chas v'shalom. Also, it actually helps, if you look at Shulchan Aruch, there's a lot of talk of a not even cut. If a mayil goes and he cuts right along the guard, then the cut is obviously going to be a very straight, very even cut, and he won't have tzitzin. Just want to mention one thing. A lot of people refer to this as the clamp. This is not a clamp. This is magen, a clamp. The reason why they refer to it the same is they look very similar. This is a magen, this is a guard. Very different in use. This is a safety measure. This is an instrument used, most popular in all hospitals today, and especially by Reform, Mayilim, they love this. We'll explain soon. It's used to do the bris. What happens here is, same thing, they slide that tara, the arla into here, close it, and you slip it shut. As you can see, you can't even see light through this thing. What happens is, this clamps the skin so tight that the all blood flow is completely restricted, and eventually, over about 10 minutes time, the capillaries, the vessels, whatever they are, they completely, they're clotting agents inside, clot the vessels completely, and the skin at the end turns completely dead, and it can literally just be peeled off afterwards. Obviously, the myla is, you don't need to put on a bandage, it doesn't bleed afterwards, just go home. Mayilim loved it, the ones who used it. They would go to the house, they would take the baby far away into a basement somewhere where no one heard, they would put this on, and as you can imagine, the baby would shriek and scream very, very loud. I haven't been to a torture chamber, but I'm sure there's a few things that look just like this there. After about 10 minutes, the baby usually falls asleep from sheer exhaustion and not feeling anything more. The mayil would then bring the baby out to the crowd, make a ceremonious bris. He would use a knife even though it's not necessary, make brachas even though the kapshuti brachas levatala, and do the bris. There would be no bleeding, be no crying, and everyone loved him. They could keep eating bagels and lox. Of course, when this came out, the gedolim shrayed chai v'kayim. Various halakhic reasons, whether there's a chittuch, whether there's dam, but of course the number one reason not to use it is the tzar involved. So this was never used, and it's just for demonstration purposes. Back to our chittuch. So we explained that we did the tfisa, and we were able to cut off the arla. What happens as soon as one cuts this off? It was only held down by the tfisa. What happens when someone finishes the cut. Obviously, this little elevator that was pushed in down here now comes riding back up, and it comes up with all the priyas still attached. Like we explained, the priyas very attached to the gid, it's cone-shaped. Some of it got pulled up in his tefisa, because it's attached to the top of the arla, but most of it remained on the bottom. This would be very hard to push down. It's attached, it's not shaped right, and if someone would try to rip it, the place seems to be, he could damage the corona, he could damage that Torah. So therefore, Chazal say that a person should take his nails, his fingernails, two and two, rip it this way down. This would give him two ears, loosen all the tension, and then he can easily pull down the priya down here. It's very stretchy, it will bump up down here. Eventually, after being bandaged down here, it will grow and fuse together with the arachitzin. We'll be left with the beautiful atara, completely clean, and the priya attached to the arachitzin on the bottom. After he does this and he pushes it down, the male does mitzitza, he puts his mouth all the way over the whole thing, he makes a strong sock, and then either puts on powder first to stop the bandaging, to stop the bleeding, or he puts on a bandage right away, and that would be the end of his bris. There is one sort of change that's not, most people didn't have it in Europe, but it is brought down even from Shitas Ga'inim and the Shulchan Gavaya. The Ayvet said everyone should use it. Now, as we see in this picture, here there's a lot of Priya. Here there's very little Priya. Sometimes, if there's too much Priya, there's no room for it over here. And like Chazal talk about, and the Gemara talks about, especially if someone gets fat, where there's a very short kid, there's no room for this priya, and it might end up coming up, bunching up, and coming over. So Mayulim saw always that the less priya you have underneath the atara, the nicer and cleaner your bris is going to remain afterwards. So what was the way to get in your tefisa more priya? So they had this tool called a probe. It looks like a needle, but it's not sharp. It's rounded at the end. And before the bris, the male would takes the probe, he sticks it inside through the nekev, he puts it between the priya and the atara, he goes all the way around, clockwise, counterclockwise, separating the priya from the atara. Once it's separated, now when he makes his tefisa, and he pushes out that, and he pushes out that priya, much more priya is going to stay up. Since it's not attached anymore, not all, but a much more priya is going to stay up in his tefisa, leaving less priya afterwards and making much less shilas and complications lahalacha in the future.
This is your stock? This is not stock?
Everybody does this. The reason why you don't see this usually by a bris is because many mayulim do it before the bris in the room. Some do it right. Then, Kamat 95, probably to 99% of mayulim all probe. Shabbos is a shayla machlik sepeskim. If you should do it on Shabbos, so the ones who don't do it erev Shabbos, they come by and do it. Or on Shabbos, most old is better do it right by the bris. That's where sometimes people see it done. But it's done by all mayulim. Even mayulim in the past, in Europe, didn't have probes. They always had different tricks where they did try to get as much priya, as we explained. Always the mumchus of a mayil was merivus besser. The more priya he got, that showed in his mumchus, because that left a neater bris afterwards. So now we know what the bris is, we know what mila is, we know what priya is. I just want to mention one last thing, that we said one reason why you have to rip that priya to push it down, because otherwise it would be very hard to get it down. There's a second reason, that if you would somehow force it down, since it's really cone-shaped, has a lot of tension, and the baby erects and the tracks all the time, it's very shliach that it would pop back up. And if it would pop back up, you invite to be aral, be considered aymed lachzer. By ripping it, you release all that tension. There's nothing, even if it flipped forward, it could flip right back down. Eventually it's going to join up with that arachitzin, it's going to fuse together, and you'll have a nice, beautiful bris. So now that we know what the bris is, we could go into the major shilas that that the Gedolim fought about over Hilchos Mila.
If it cuts off a little bit, starts growing back a little bit, that be considered not
gemalik? So halacha is, and we'll get to it soon, if the bris was completely kosher at the time, it's kosher. Later it's a shilas marasayim. However, if it's oymed lachzer when he cut it, for example, let's say, we'll see someone cuts too little, we'll get to what that means in a minute, A lot of times the mohel goes and he bandages it down. It remains down just because of the bandage and the scab that ensues afterwards. A week or two later, it pops back up. That's called Eimed Lachzer. He was never yetzer to the bris. The ideal time to check a baby is 3-4 weeks after the bris. That's when you'll see it should look completely clean, the entire rim and charitz. If not, it should definitely be shown to a mohel. And we'll see what the problems can be. After that, just to mention, babies, till they start walking, they get very fat, a lot of pubic fat, there's no foot muscles, and they get what we call pilkis in Yiddish, I don't know the English word for it, and therefore a lot of times if they get very fat, their whole gid gets buried completely. That and swing fat is nothing, you just have to wait till he starts walking and it'll go back. But at a month's time, before that started, ideal time to check.
I had that issue that you're talking about now, except that we have to bring it back to a mile to fix it. Even though it had that issue where it was so buried in there, the bris started to become undone.
Stuck.
Yeah, it started actually to almost reconnect.
Sometimes if it's in there, it can like get very stuck.
I don't know the first
from you from just from moisture inside. And you could any mile, some doctors will just do it themselves, just be pulled apart. But eventually as he comes down, it'll come forward. So let's get to the first tremendous machlokes that went on a little in Muhammad Gedela about the Halchas Mila. There was the Mishnah tells us that Roiv, if it Roiv of that Torah is still covered after the bris, that's a pasul of bris. The Gemara says an even bigger chiddush, if there's Roiv Gaiv, if there's Arla coming up in one spot over Raiv of the Atara, that would already pass the Libris. However, what is the Atara? I'm explaining the whole time that this whole top is Atara. However, if you learn Gemaris, you'll see that a lot of times the Gemara refers to the Atara as only this widest area. The rest is not considered Atara. The Beis Yosef says that Beis Svard Altila, when Svard was in its prime, it broke out a great machlekes in the yeshiva as to what is considered Atara l'ingin Mila. Rishi Yaakov said the Rishiva wasn't around at the time to Paskin, and even when he came later, he refused to Paskin. The Tuas Shar's Shita is the most Chomerdik Shita, that just this is the Atara, just where it gets wide. What would come out for this, that Rav Gaiv, in one spot, you have a little bit too much Atara, and it comes up over the ridge, in one spot, you have a Pasul of Bris. And even though Kipshuta, we might don't pass like Tuas Shar, but if you look at Kiva Eger right there, and Shulchan Aruch says, I am a Tuas Shar, so does the Goyim Arshah say, I am a Tuas Shar, and the Chassam Sefer, Mesech Shabbat, says, Mitzvah, I am a Tuas Shar. It's definitely something with Chachila. There's a lot of Mashmais in Yishayim like the Tuas Shar that we want to have more than enough Arlakot that even in one spot it shouldn't be coming over. The Arakatana is the opposite extreme. The whole thing's Atara, and only if you'd have Arla coming up the whole rave of the whole height would it be an issue, which is not as common. But the Beis Yosef himself brings the Chacham Asfaradis Shita, and this is how we paskin la halacha, that there's two types of Atara. There's Atara klape Geiva, which is going on the whole top. There's Atara klape Hekif, which is just referring to this, called an Ikar Atara. So it comes out, if a mayo left a little bit too much Arla all around, even a flat cut, and it comes a little bit over that Atara, if it's Ara Arla, and this is how we paskin, even Lukul on Shabbos will go back for it. According to Mishnah Berurah, this will be a pasul of bris if he left too much. Like we said, even if it comes back a week later, since it wasn't cut enough in the beginning, this would pasul of bris. So this would be the first problem in Mila. That was the first big machlokes. World War II happened quite a while later, was a second shaila. As we explained, the arla is cut completely off, like says in Shulchan Aruch, the pri is pushed down. What would be if a mile went, he cut off 3/4 of the arla? The rest of the Arla, he pushed down, and it fused down, because it got stuck into the Priya, and it stayed down. There's a bump here, there's a ridge, and it's very possible it would stay down. Meaning it was Pireya the Arla. He didn't cut it all off. Is he Yaitza the Brist or not? The Chachmas Adam wrote a tshuva that Arla has to be completely cut off, and if you don't cut it off, it's a possible Brist. You weren't Yaitza the Brist. Is Al Maria Saad and others, the one with the Shitzchach Masadam. It's just important to know, Lefidachach Masadam, there are a lot, hundreds and hundreds of people that don't have the Mitzvah Smila today and in all the years. It's a very common thing. There are Mayalim who are famous for not taking off the whole Arla. We'll see why they do that soon. And according to the Chach Masadam, if you don't cut off completely the Arla, So the place to explain his word that you may not be an RO, if it's not covering the Torah, you may not be an RO, but the mitzvah of Mila you don't have. And it's also very negiah, even if we say you're not an RO, but as we'll see later, someone gets fat and so on, and it comes forward later, usually it's just a Shiloh Maris Ayin. However, Lufi, the Taz and others, if it was Arlo that was pushed down, even if when he's 40 or 50, it's fat that causes his skin to come back forward, if now it's original Arlo skin that's coming forward, then it would possibly make him an Arlo Menatera, according to a lot of Shitas. However, the Divrei Chaim and Rav Poskim argue, and they all Mila's like Priya, the Iker is, the Lamdish way to declare the Chakira is the mitzvah Mila to cut off the Arla, or is the mitzvah to be Megal V'Atara? They understand that it's to be Megal V'Atara, and if it's pushed down, you yaitz of the bris. Yeah, the whole Atara. There's actually, this past winter, I had a Yigamani Yeshiva in his 50s. He was born, like I say, where, but in a different country, it was known. He came to show the bris, and it was completely Megala. But there was skin still in the back that was Arla skin clearly and could be pulled forward. Meaning the Marl did exactly what we spoke about. La halacha we said, if it doesn't come forward, we pass the Divrei Chaim, Avnei Nezer and others will say this is the halacha, and he doesn't need a new bris. He was insistent, he wants one anyway. There are so many shittas that holds that he didn't get mitzvah smila, he does everything the most chamer dekaifin, he has the nicest esring and everything, how could he not have a bris, a chais and bris kodesh in his body, and he wanted. My father was hesitant to do it. We sent him to a Rav, Rabbi Forsham, the Radas of Lakewood. He said if he wants, he has a full right, he understands him, and he taka did a complete bris, and now he told me his brother wants to come. He was also born out there. I did most of the bris, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I do adults a lot. This Thursday, actually, I have two in Albert Einstein Hospital in Philly. I'll be doing two adults, Rosh Hashanah and Tshuva.
Do they use anesthesia?
Yeah, we do local anesthesia. These two boys that I'm doing Thursday want general anesthesia, so they're going to it in the hospital. But 95% of the time, we do it at home. We do local anesthesia. Yeah, we do all the adults at home. We give them local anesthesia, and they don't feel anything. It's just the shots that are painful. There's a certain age kid that we don't like doing at home.
Do you have a doctor do it?
No, we do it ourselves. There's a certain age kid who'll just scream too much. When they're very little, we tie them down, we give them local anesthesia, but once they're bigger, they realize nothing hurts, and we do the bris at home. So let's get on. So these are the two things. So like I was saying, getting back to why, to like we say the thing, is any male okay? I've been probably at 100 redos in my life. That's Brisna had to be redone. It come from very far to my father at a state and so on. Why do we do so many redos? And why did you probably never hear of one? So the first reason is Minig Ashkenaz, unlike Minig Svard, is even though in Halach and Shulchan Aruch, when you do a bris, you need 10 people. But when they do a redo, we don't call a minyan, because we don't want to embarrass the male. And since usually the parents don't want to brag about it either, it stays usually very quiet. Obviously, it's very sad. When you redo, he needs anesthesia, he needs stitches. It has to be usually dissected out. You can't pull it up anymore. It's only a little bit. So it has to be cut around with a scissor. It's not fun. It's not pleasant. But if Yeruchim Olshin, the Shiva Lakin, once showed me the other side. Somebody once came for a redo, and Yeruchim was his first tzaddik. Now that he was doing the redo, he realized Yeruchim was never his son tzaddik. Yeruchim was more like his babysitter, and he wanted Yeruchim to be his tzaddik. So he called him up and said, "Can you please come down to the tournament, to the house, when you do the redo and be the tzaddik?" So he said, gladly, and he came. After the bris, he told me privately that he was very excited to get this phone call. I was getting very excited to get a phone call about a redo. So he told me he was at the bris, and it looked to him, no, that it was too little. But he's not a male, and what does he know? And the male's going to check it. And he didn't want to say anything. But for months, it's been bothering him. He's always been thinking about that bris. And when he heard that he's now going to have a kosher bris. So obviously, if we have a shiloh, we want to show it to a male. We want to know what to look for. Like he explained, the completely clear Torah, especially 4 weeks afterwards. But lechatchila, we're choosing a
male.
Usually they don't go back to the male who did it. It's not advisable. A male always has the geas. He's going to say it's going to get better. Let's watch it. Let's play it. Usually show it to two or three top maleim. And if they agree, besides, I just want to say, it's not really worth the money. redo is at least double the price of the bris. You don't get back your first money either. So a lot of times somebody has a friend, they'll do it for free. In Lakewood 2 years ago, there was a mohel who was paying $1,000. The shrei was very rich, and he was paying $1,000 if he would use him as a mohel. I heard people were trying to have twins. It's a risk, and it's not a risk that you want to take. Three reasons. First reason we spoke about at the beginning, and it's uncommon, there are Torah stories. There was one last year, and the ones I know, two or three the year before. There are questions of redos, but more than that, as I'll explain more, when a mohel leaves a lot of kriya left over, he takes a very close shear, it ends up being bunched up, it ends up coming over, it ends up being a not nice bris. The Gemara in Shabbos talks about mila nol. Even though it's not an esrog, we're not going to show it around in shul, but this is the chaysim ois bris kodesh that every person has in their guf, that's his branding, that he's an Eved Hashem. So it would seem that one would want to have it in an oifana, if the mitzvah he always has with him. So
when you redo it, does it look like scar? Are you saying it's ugly when you do it?
No, actually, it usually looks beautiful afterwards. It looks regular. It heals nicely, a lot of stitches. It heals very fast because it's stitched closed. Just want to say the two reasons why redos are common. There's two mistakes that a mohel might make. One is, in this picture, we have the arla as long as that tara. Many times, babies' arlas are much longer. The arla could be up to here, and that tara is only up to here. Especially when the mohel starts doing the bris, and he's touching the gid, it becomes the skasha, it becomes erect, and it'll travel up into the top half of the arla that's usually extra. If the mohel goes then and takes off the arla that's covering that tara, b'shas kishui, he was not yet to the bris. I saw a mohel do this last week. Now afterwards he pushed it down, maybe it will stay down, and Allah will be yet like the v'chayim. And I told my father, I was at a bris today, because it was in Westgate, there were two shuls, I did one and someone else did one. So my father immediately said, that mohel, yeah, I did a few redos on him. Chances are it'll stay down, but it could come back up. So that's the first reason. If he's not Mishayer, the right place.
You couldn't say anything.
I don't say anything. No. Like I said, the halachi might be, he'll probably majority of the time be Yitzha. So most of the time it will stay down, but if that's the first mistake, me Mishayer. The much more common mistake is many babies are born very, very short. And even though here you see a whole shaft, but their body's right here, and all that protrudes from their guf is just the atara. All the skin covering it is arla, it's covering atara. The complete skin has to be removed. So much so that a lot of times you cut off this skin, there's literally just a hole here. There's no shaft. No shaft is nowhere to bandage. Every mohel knows the mumchis of mila is not the cut. The priya is there. Actually, in such a case, a mohel doesn't get a lot of priya, should cut it all off, because there's nowhere for the priya to go. It's going to automatically come up. The mumchis of mila is not the cut. That's the easiest part of the bris. The second hardest, a little bit, is to know where to cut. The hardest part of a bris, and the most dangerous part, is stopping the bleeding. Milas came a long way. Except Sefer has a tshuva, like a remirif, of a lady who had twins, a son and daughter. She wanted to know if she had a din of Mesu Achav Machmis Mila, because her first twins, two boys, were nifter from their bris. It's a shaila of twins Shafa Chazaka. But her sister also had twins, they also were both died from their bris. Still a question, with sisters maybe you need three. But her mother, who didn't have twins, all her sons died from her bris. This is what Mila was not too long ago. That Nezer has tshuva after tshuva of Mesu Achav Machmis Mila. Baruch Hashem, my life, I've never heard of anyone dying from a bris. However, just about 2 or 3 weeks ago, a lady called me after a bris. She's frantic, there's blood. I come there, there's nothing. I knew something's wrong. She told me, well, last time the mohel couldn't stop because it wasn't the mohel and the baby wasn't chopped for 2 days. My father, myself, I got called many times. Especially today, we have a mohel. There are a lot of powders that are used today to stop bleeding. But on the other hand, there are a lot of mohel today who only know how to use the powders. And when they don't work, they don't even know how to put on a bandage. So the main reason why mohel won't take off enough is it's very short and they're afraid they can't put on a bandage. So therefore, they'll cheat a little bit. There's an excuse given that eventually when he gets bigger, it's going to get better. Kipshuta, he needs a bris now, not later, and many times it doesn't get better. These are the two main reasons why Meilim, why a redo is needed. Let's get to the next step. Mitzitza bepeh. I'm not here to fight. I just want to explain what, and I just want to explain quickly. I don't think what you heard, what the issue of mitzitza bepeh. Till now we spoke about machleikusin, tremendous machleikusin, that there are hundreds of tshuvas each way to Ashar and the other side, Chachmas Adam on the other side. Mitzitza bepeh is not brought anywhere. You're not going to see it in the Gemara. You're not going to see it in the Rambam Torah and Shulchan Aruch. It started like this. The Talmud of some Sefer, he had a Talmud, the Yad HaLazer. In his city, the government was wanted to come down, a bunch of kids got sick, and the doctor said it had to do Metzitz Bepeh, and they wanted to ask for it. He wrote a tshuva to the Chassam Sofer asking him if he could use a gauze to squeeze it out. Chassam Sofer wrote back, it doesn't say it anywhere, it's Divrei Kabbalah, Ein Lanu B'Nistareis, and it's fine to use a gauze, it's just as good. This tshuva created a tumult, gadol. In my life, I've never seen, there was a kolkeira put out in Europe of over 250 gedolei rabbanim. Every single chassidus he ever heard, every city is on that paper. And Eretz Yisrael, they also came out with great kolkeiras against doing it. Not only that, many said that this tshuva never existed. It's a mezuyif, it was made up, it never happened. Some say if it's not in a svarim. The Shevet HaLevi writes that when he was in England, he was in a library and he saw the actual copy, the handwritten one of the Chassam Sofer. On the side of it was written by a Talmud, it's Asur to be mad for this. Just to explain what the Machlekes was about. The Reform movement, whenever they started up with Yiddishkeit, there were two things they always started up with first. Shechita and Milah. When it came to Milah, the place that they always found a listening ear was Metzitz Mepeh. Goyim loved making fun of it. Even 2-3 years ago, when we had the same issue here in New York, the talk radio caricatures were abound making fun of the practice. Therefore, a lot of people, especially Hasidic circles, saw this as a melchama against Milah, not against Metzitz Mepeh, and put there and felt that you have to be Meister Nefesh for it, even though it might not necessarily be a halachic, it might not be a shayla halacha. There's a story, they say, that Reb Barrel, when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he, in Brisk, the minute, after a lot of litvish places, when there were different sicknesses going around, nobody did Metzitz Mepeh. In Brisk, they didn't do Metzitz Mepeh. Vilna didn't do Metzitz Mepeh, tuberculosis was going around. So in Brisk, they didn't do. So Reb Barrel asked the Brisker Rav, should I do Metzitz Mepeh on my son? Brisker Rav said, you should. Said, Ab in the Haim, at home, we didn't do it. So Biskarab said, in Bris, it was Sakonis Nefashis to do Metzitza Bepeh. Here in Yushalayim, it's Sakonis Nefashis not to do Metzitza Bepeh. Meaning, it's more Mulchama, and just recently there was a Mila meeting here in Brooklyn, and the lawyer who was working with Agoda told me that the head of the health department in New York told him the exact same thing. I will not rest till Mila is taken out of the hands of Meilim and given to doctors. This is the Yisrael Mechama. It starts at Metzitza Bepeh, and that's why there's such a Mechama against it. Not necessarily Allah, that Nezer wrote, that's no Sakana today. So much so that Reb Shlomo Zalman in Shulchan Shlomo declares why it's mutter to do Metzitza Bepeh on Shabbos today. Since it's not a Sakana anymore, it should be usher to do it. And he declares that maybe it's because Mekalkal. And his son, Reb Shmuel Orbach, in a different sefer, says today we do a very quick Metzitza. It's probably not Dam Chaburi Mechaber. But so in a lot of places, they didn't do it. Like we said, a lot say it's not a sakana, but the Sheikh Levi writes that he was at a bris and he was warning the Meil to do it. The Chazanish was there, and he told him, "By uns is nach de Pirtza. By us it's ready. The mais is over. By dear Halstark, since you have the minig, it's definitely a minig. It's definitely a mesayra." He told him that he should keep. So, just wanted to explain why we have this great machlekes. Obviously, if it's sakana like it was in bris, then the first person to ask for it would be the Meil. The next big machlekes that's going on today, it's raging today. Just last year, a man who's now Ravin in New York, his name is Daniel Kleiman, I'm a Sefer Kleiman, Salach, Shmuel Kamenetsky, Svarim, he put out an entire kuntzris defending this practice. It's something called Milu Priya Ka'achas. As we explained before, the mumchis of a mile was always to get as much Priya as he possibly could. There's a tool called a hemostat. It looks like this. If anyone is ever awake in an operating room, he'll know that this is the instrument of choice in the operating room. A surgeon has about 200 of these in every shape, size, and curve. It's almost exclusively, aside for a scalpel, the tool he uses. Ma'ilim realized, or doctors, someone who was doing Brisson realized, that with this tool, one could stick it into through the top of that tar like one does with a probe, put it all the way in to the base. It has a clicker. It's not a scissor, it's just a gripper. It grips the mila, the arla and the priya together. You could click it closed. It's holding it there. Now when it'll make his chitach, there'll still be some more priya will get stretched up, because like we said, priya grows out from the bottom of the from the chritz, but 98% of his priya is going to get caught in his tvisa, and when he finishes, that minuscule amount of priya is just, you're barely going to see it. You don't have to rip it, you don't have to tear it. And mitzad hilchis mila, mitzad dine mila, it seems a miracle tool. It makes the most beautiful brisin. When my Zaydis saw my father doing a bris with this tool, they couldn't believe how beautiful his brisin were. However, as with everything new, when this came out, and especially in America, they were using it all over, a lot of Gedolim, especially the Hasidim, tried very stark against it, that Lamais, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, first you do Mila, and then you do Priya. There's also the Shulchan Aruch says you do Bitzipayrin. There's a Medrash to do a Bitzipayrin. So, they said, you have to do it separate. What is just important, besides that there's already Shuvas Ga'inim that brings it, and there's Shulchan Gevayah that brings it, it does go back. I'll just give an example. Rabbi Yossel Weisberg, many may have heard of him. Probably from Yeshua ben Nun, he was the greatest mael. I mean, he did the most. He did over 100,000 bris in his life. For 40 years, he didn't say Tachnam. There was nobody in the entire Yerushalayim who wouldn't use him. He wrote the whole Sefer Eitzer Bris, a four-volume Sefer, widely used, is his Sfarim. Everyone used him. He was, Maishla today is his son. He was known, I heard Kama Edis of people who watched him. He was like the great big mumcha that we spoke about. He would get the whole Arlan Priya without a hemostat. He had a few different tricks that he didn't teach anybody.
His fingers,
he would grab from inside.
He had
a few tricks. And he would get the whole Arlan Priya, and he would never do Priya B'tzipayun afterwards. And nobody ever said a word. Like we said, my Zayda was a male, his wife was a midwife, she had her own trick. He would tell her that from day one she should pull down on the Arla and Priya till they widened the hole all the way. By the eighth day, he's able to pull it down completely, separate it, and then get. So Mayim always tried to get as much as they could. The ones who write against it say that Menachas Yitzchak, that you should leave Raiv, so it should be Ma'akev. Today, if Mayo leaves Raiv, he ain't going to be in business more than 2 or 3 days. So, this is the Inyan. But, of course, I just want to mention again, with all these things, with Tzitzit Bepeh, tomorrow morning I have a bris, and the father, is the first time it happened in Lakewood, he asked me to use a tube to do Metzitza. From all the years watching my father, over 1,000 brisin, I only saw one case in Lakewood where someone asked him. But I'm a shliach of the mayel. There's two sides. The father asks me not to use the hemostat. I don't use the hemostat. He wants to leave more priya. It's his mitzvah. I'm a shliach of him. I do it his way. And now we get to shlichus. There's a new fad out there. People doing their own bris. Why should I or shouldn't I? Well, let's just explain why it became a new fad. Today, we have this. We have the guard. It became very simple to cut. Anyone could practice a few times. Everyone's welcome to come up afterwards. And as long as you go into the guard and you stay on it, it's going to be a nice, clean cut. So if the mayel makes the tfisa, even if you make the cut, it's going to be a big, beautiful cut. Originally, people said, very nice, the father could do mila, but it's very complicated to do priya. Father won't be able to do priya, mavalei para kilu lei ma. But like we explained today, Mayalim, with the hemostat, without the hemostat, from probing, in the tfisa, we get most of the mila and priya off. So, really, the father's doing the mila and priya anyway. So, even though there's a little bit priya left, we explain in a minute how we do it. You split it with your nails and you put it down to Mekayin and Medeshech HaTayiv, but technically, the father's able to do the whole bris, so should he do it or not? Just want to go back. After this thing with the hemostat, I've left out one thing. Maybe what made my father famous. Because of this Ramosha, even though we pass in like the Chaznish and Baron was Machmed to do Ka'achas, Ramosha writes in one tshuva, Miyais Toiv, leave a little bit of Priya so you can do it with your nails. So our minig, when not asked otherwise, is to put it, even that in, not put it all the way, pull it back a little bit, not clip it because that causes tsar. We don't get 80-90%, so the bris will still be a beautiful bris, but you'll still have a little bit of Priya over, and hopefully everybody's happy, although never is everyone happy. So shlichas b'mila. So there's an arzarua that says that if a father could do the bris himself, he can't give it to somebody else. So we just said every father today can do the bris, so you can't give it to somebody else. The Ramah asks that he doesn't understand every mitzvah passes shlichas. How could it be that he can't give somebody else the mitzvah? So there's a rosh that says that if somebody steals the mitzvah from the father, I come into the house in the morning, I grab the baby, and I just cut it off. The Rosh says, I stole a mitzvah, I have to give him asara zuvim, I have to give him 10 zuvim, like the halacha, the gemara, you have to give for stealing a mitzvah. But he says, if I hired a mohel to do it, and this guy comes and steals the bris away from the mohel, you don't have to pay asara zuvim. The Shach and the Ktois learned that the pshat on this Rosh is, that the Rosh holds, you can't make a shliach to do the bris. If you didn't do the bris, you lost the mitzvah. Why would that be? The Tzaisik understands that just like tefillin, you can't make a shliach for, it's a mitzvah begufay, you can't make a shliach to daven for you, although it would be quite convenient, or to sit in a sukkah for you. So too, the mitzvah of mila is to actually cut. And you can't let somebody cut for you. If he does it, you lose the whole mitzvah. However, it's kama v'kama rishonim, that a mavur, maybe Ramban, Ritva, that shlichas does pass the mill, the Shulchan Aruch and Torah say, the mayil should stand next, the Aviyah Ben should stand next to the mayil, leidiyah yishu shluchay, and there's other truths for the Rosh. So pashtis, of this taina, all the Rishonim say, it does pass shlichas, so it wouldn't be necessary to do it yourself, which usually takes a little longer, sometimes the father comes up, he doesn't cut it as straight. But there's another shayla. It's a famous halacha in the Gemara. Mitzvah ba yaisim mishluchai. A lot understand that's what Zeruah is saying. If you could do it, mitzvah ba yaisim mishluchai. And like we said today, you could do it. So on this, the Achrayim say, the other side is that this, that mitzvah ba yaisim mishluchai, is a derech b'zayin. That means, I'm not interested, I want to go play golf, let somebody else do it for me. But when it's done with derech kavod, I want him to chabit somebody, or if he could do it better than me, or even more so, I'm going to pay him to do a better job, there it doesn't pass mitzvah b'yosef v'shulchai. So therefore, a lot of say, there's no inyan, you could definitely hire a mayil. However, as we see, there are inyanim, whether there are shittas that hold that doesn't pass shlichas, and there are shittas that hold this mitzvah b'yosef, so there would be a mucker to this whole shayla, and that's where you see a lot of people. I must say, by the gedolim, I didn't see it. There are some of them who are very against it. Don Segel spoke in Lakewood. The Hesper was a little crazy, he was very against it. I know David Soloveitchik, if he hears the father doing the chittach, he won't even come, he won't be sandik. There are some of them who are very against it. But there's a truth from the Zalman, or the Yashiv, the father's confident, he could stay calm, he could cut nicely, cut neatly, then he's definitely mukhan and bezumah to do it. Many fathers ask me to do it. Like I said, it's not that we see machmirim usually do it, it's usually guys who are that type, but it's definitely the ability is made very easy because of the new tools. And finally, I want to be done by 9:30, I hate people who go overtime, is Sabov jaundice, what do the numbers mean? We all hear about yellow, and then this mile's need to wait 7 days, this mile's ready to do it, doctors don't know what you're waiting for. What does it mean, jaundice? What does bilirubin mean? It's just a brief explanation. Bilirubin is broken up red blood cells, like dead red blood cells. They are water insoluble, they can't come out of the blood. And these broken up blood cells cause a yellow pigmentation in the skin of the baby. The actual number, whether it's 7 or 10, means 7 milligrams of bilirubin per 1,000 grams of blood. The Gemara says that a red baby and a green baby is sakana, you can't do the bris. The Rishonim explained red means that the blood was not nivla, didn't go in yet, it's still between the skin and the skin and the flesh. And green means his blood didn't come in yet. We don't know We seemingly don't have these things anymore in the Metzius today. We don't know what they are. But Yaivitz and others say that included in the color green, it's Gemara and Chulin, is the color yellow. So yellow we also can't do a bris. And that's where this comes from. Some places they were very machber, especially in Hungarian places, at very small numbers of yellow they wouldn't do a bris. In Poland and in Litta they were much more makel, and only if it was extremely yellow. We find even a lot of Rishonim use a lashon of Yarek B'Yoyser, and the Mechaber takes out the word Yaiser, so it seems to be a Shaila in Shifas. However, what causes this? So we explain it's the bilirubin. How does it get out of the blood system? So it's water insoluble, can't go into the urine. There's an enzyme that's produced by the liver, which when this mixes with the bilirubin, it causes it become water soluble, and now it can be passed out of the system. When babies are born, their liver is not yet fully developed, and it takes time till it starts working at full capacity, till it's able to get rid of all the bilirubin. This is called physiological jaundice. It's a natural development of the baby jaundice. Doctors consider it no sakana at all. It's not going to cause bleeding, which seems to be the sakana of yellow and green. And you can do the bris. The only sakana that doctors are afraid of, if the bilirubin reaches extremely high numbers, then it's possible, for very concentrated, it could cross the blood-brain barrier and cause retardation, chas v'shalom, kinetic, as it's called. Therefore, if it gets too high, they'll put him under the lights to break it down, or if it gets really high, they'll give him blood transfusion, they'll take out blood and add new blood, so it shouldn't, chas v'shalom, get too high. They used to do it as low as 15, then 20. Now they won't do it till 25, a transfusion. Because we see that it's still not a problem. This is all physiological jaundice. There is such a thing as pathological jaundice, which means that it is a real chayla that we're dealing with. And then the doctors obviously will keep him in the hospital and he's a chayla. But physiological jaundice, the doctors don't consider a chayla at all, and they say you can do the bris. On the other side, Mayalim, Paiskim say we have a Kabbalah, we have a Messiah, the Gemara tells us we can't do yellow, and so you can't do it. Just want to point out one thing. Two examples. There's Shlomo Zalman in Nishmas Avram, which is written by a doctor, it's a famous halacha sefer on all medical issues. In one of the first Madura Tavshanayin Aleph, he brings from Shlomo Zalman, because of three doctors, that if the baby reaches over 18, we have to wait 7 days. In Tavshanayin Hay, he writes from Shlomo Zalman about a baby reached over 19, is that they do the bris mizmanai. What happened? The doctor's opinion, like we say, changed 15, 20, 25. Example number two. In the Bris Avraham HaKohen, Rami Cohen, maybe you may have heard of him, he's a mile from Staten Island. He wrote a whole sefer on Mila. He was a Talmud Muvik of the Papadayim. The Papadayim in his time wrote a very sharp letter that if a baby reaches over 10, which is today considered very low, then you have to wait 7 days chaymer. So he asked the Shevet HaLevi, does he have to listen to his Rebbe Muvik's? There's Rebbe's Muvuk's psak. And he told him, no, you're a Muvuk pasuk, and I'll pee the doctors. And now that changed, you could change. So one thing we see is that it goes according to the doctors. But I think the explanation is very simple. The time of the Gemara, they didn't know if yellow is pathological jaundice or physiological jaundice. So therefore, it's a chash sakano, you can't do the bris. But it's very likely to say that if today the doctors, through their tests, can discern the difference between the two jaundices, and they know this one's not a sakana, that allows the Gdolim today to say that you could do the bris. Just want to point out, I think it's an important thing to realize. A lot of times, if a person has a certain mile, maybe he's from those that are very machmer, he'll tell him he can't do the bris. It's very possible that you should have to ask your own shayla. It's the eighth day, you have a chiv to do the bris. Your rav may tell you that Rosh Hashanah said to do the bris today, you got to do the bris. Just because your mile is psak and his mesayra, it doesn't mean that you should be going with the mesayra l'chayra. We understand, a person should ask his own shayla as whether to do the bris.
And
What's your question?
Yes? About here.
He's had to listen to the mile. Okay. Yeah, to listen to the doctor. The question, I'm not saying over the doctor. I'm just saying over...
To listen to the mile.
Right. So there's different
mile. What's your threshold?
We do up till 15.
Up till 15.
Which is really, by us, cool. It's not even... Our Messiah was always like that. Because like I said, in Poland, my Zaydis always said, they did till a very deep yellow sets in, which only sets in at about 15-16. Just if you wanted Zushtel to this, just an interesting Zushtel. Recently, I have a Chabur Smila, we learned Hilchus Smila, the second Seder in Yeshiva, and we're handling the whole Shiloh of Androgynous, which is a fascinating issue by itself. But there's a true from the Shevet Alevi, where we had an Androgynous, Shevet Alevi said, do tests and see if the Androgynous has the complete Kli Teilada, he has the Kli of childbearing of a woman on the inside and not of a man, then he holds completely, this one was a girl. Even though it's far from the Tshuvas, that at the time of the Gemara, this would have been a Suffolk. He would have been given all Dini Androgynous. But now that we're able to see, the Suffolk no longer exists, we see that he's more boy than girl, that's what the lady says. So similar over here, if we could know Alpi doctors, that would be the Makkah that we see. Even the Machmirim keep being Makel Alpi the doctors, because they say we see there's no Sakana. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for listening.